Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I have a question.
Erin, is this my last question of 2020?
It is. This is the last question of 2020. This is the last episode of the year. You know how many weeks we took off this year?
None.
0 weeks. There
I
was
love
an
us.
Episode of Hysteria every week this year, except for the final week of the year between Christmas and New Year's. That'll be the first week that we do not release an episode.
Do you know that 2020 couldn't stop us?
No, 2020 absolutely could. We only became more powerful.
We did. We kind of mutated. We were like a virus.
Exactly. Well, my question for you was, like, going into 2021, when do you think the next time is you're going to fly on an airplane?
I don't know. When will I ever have a place to go? I mean, like, I'm not lying. I could for real use a change of scenery.
Yeah. I think housing swaps will be big once we've reached herd immunity, once 75% of people are vaccinated. I think people are going to be like, do you want to just switch houses for like 2 weeks? I would love to like
in the movie The Holiday.
Yes, exactly. I would love to have like different rooms to walk into. You know?
Or just like something different to see out my window. Like I'm lucky, I have trees and everything, but I look out and I keep trying to decorate the trees because they look a little bit different.
Right. Yeah. It's the same day every single day where I live, the same weather every single day, the same view every single day. The only thing that's really changed in the last half of the year has been the anti-COVID lockdown protests that I hear from the outside of the health inspector's house because she lives in my neighborhood. So that's not been great. Let's switch houses in 2021. We'll switch houses.
Here's the thing. I haven't seen you like in person. And I'm not like a huge hugger, but I kind of want to hug you.
I kind of want to hug you too, Alyssa. All right. Let's get to the show. On this week's episode, we're joined by Ense Ufot, Tian Tran, Dana Schwartz, and Naomi Ekperigin to tackle the following questions. Who deserves to be toasted or roasted for how they behaved in 2020? What's coming up in the Georgia Senate races? How are our holiday celebrations changing during the pandemic? And is love actually fine, actually? All this and more right now. And a quick note, as we were recording this episode, news broke that President-elect Joe Biden is nominating New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland to be Secretary of the Interior. Not only is she perfect for the job, Haaland will be the first ever Native American woman to serve in that position, which is extremely exciting. So a big toast to Representative Haaland. Alyssa, we are recording this. We're recording this early. We're going to be doing our holiday celebrations or whatever. Actually, the day that this episode comes out will be Christmas Eve.
Oh.
Yeah, it'll be nice, you know, hopefully Santa's masked up. but I was thinking for the end of the year, we should do a sort of retrospective toasts and roasts, like a big one.
I'm for it. Like kind of like where 2020, just fuck 2020, and then where like people really excelled during this time.
True. Yes, exactly. Do you want to do roasts first so we can end on a toasty note?
Let's do it.
Let's do roast first. We're going to fuck it. It's our show. We can do whatever we want. No one's going to yell at us. Caroline's muted. She can't interject. Okay. Roasts. Who would you like to start out with a roast for?
Well, in October, Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court in potentially the super spreader event of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a month for the Senate to confirm Amy Coney Barrett. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, you know, her family was still probably like in the very freshest stages of mourning, and they still took a month to defy her dying wish and make sure to get an actual zealot confirmed to the Supreme Court. I think it's worth mentioning that it's taken them 8 months to come up with a new COVID relief package.
I was just going to say the same thing. We are always on the same page.
Mind meld. So yeah, a roast to Amy Coney Barrett for, you know, her legacy is always going to be tainted by the fact that she gave the president COVID. And really, I think that the pandemic really kicked into a new and shitty gear after that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's always going to be attached to her, no matter what she does as a judge. It's just sort of like Sandra Day O'Connor with Bush v. Gore, you know?
It is. And, you know, it's kind of like her confirmation kicked off the second wave of coronavirus that Mike Pence repeatedly said was never going to happen. Yeah,
Mike
here we
Pence.
Are.
One of the, and then, you know, Mike Pence is right now about to be publicly inoculated. He's going to get the shot on camera. So that's, you know, how the turntables, as they said in The Office. Also, I was just thinking about Amy Coney Barrett and how, you know, that meme online that's like the four genders and it'll be like four different flavors or it'll be four like different frozen treats or whatever. You know how I've like joked that the four genders are Sephora, GameStop, Michaels, and Home Depot?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I think that like just taking a look at like the different types of conservatives on the Supreme Court, it's sort of like, wow, we've got all four of the genders of conservatives. You know, we've got the like... We've got the absolutely nuts Roman Catholic guy in Samuel Alito. Like this, right. I'm Catholic, so I can shit on Catholics. It's not anti-Catholic. It's fine. We got Samuel Alito, who is like the absolutely nuts Roman Catholic guy. We've got Neil Gorsuch, who's sort of the like Sam the Eagle, like stern logic Muppet. Who,
yes.
Like you don't think that he ever laughs. Or if he does, it's at weird times.
Doesn't laugh.
Right.
There is no laughter.
Right. And then we have Brett the Beer Crusher Kavanaugh, like a party boy fuck up who considers it like oppression when he doesn't get all of, you know, get everything he
and
wants.
Never solved a crime.
Yeah, exactly. And Amy Coney Barrett, who I think would have been exactly the type of person to call the cops on Brett Kavanaugh.
Like without she's question,
the like dour buttoned up like zealot, but a lady zealot, and it's just you know we've got a real rainbow of garbage there. I wanted to roast the White House communications office, the outgoing White House communications office, not the incoming one. I think the incoming one we're excited about. In June, Sarah Huckabee Sanders left the White House, and Kayleigh McEnany replaced her. So kind of out of the frying pan and into the younger, blonder frying pan in this case. Both of them are big-time liars, and I can't believe that we've only been dealing with Kayleigh McEnany since June. It seems like so much longer.
And isn't this just, not to just rehash history, but didn't Kayleigh say in her first press conference she'd never lie?
Her first lie.
Her first lie.
Congratulations, Kayleigh.
I hope there's an ornament on her tree that says that.
My first lie.
My first lie.
Yeah, or like a cross stitch on her entry wall. Let's see. Do you have another roast that you want to do?
I mean, how could the roasting of 2020 be complete without saying "fuck you, Mitch McConnell"?
Mm-hmm.
He is the hideous turtle. He is, there is nothing positive. You can't say one good thing about him. There's not one. Mm-hmm. He is not a Republican. He's a Trumper. It's like, you know, the thing that bugs me so much about this year in Mitch McConnell, it's like, he's been waiting his whole life for this year. Like to be as gross and inhumane as he is in his heart, to be out loud. Mm-hmm. And he just felt free to let his evil freak flag fly this year. And it's flying. It flew. I hope it's almost done. But he's a bad person.
He's a bad person. He deserves to feel bad, but I don't think he's capable of feeling bad. I think he's kind of like the Bob Iger of Hollywood for ugly people.
Elaborate.
Like, okay, so Bob Iger is a very important executive in Hollywood.
Very tan.
The joke is that DC is Hollywood for ugly people in all the worst possible ways, that it's very climbery. It's a lot of schmoozing, a lot of garbage people rising to the top by fucking other people over. The difference between Hollywood and DC is it's warmer here, and in DC people, it's not a town. The political class in DC does not have a reputation of being very good looking. And in Hollywood, they do have a reputation of being good looking. So anyway, that's why he's the Bob Iger.
You can see for all those reasons you articulated why I did not thrive in DC.
Yeah, DC. The DC, like, natives are great. DC is its own separate thing. When we say DC, we're talking about, like, the political...
A very specific radius.
Yeah, a very, very specific radius and a very specific type. I have a roast. I'd like to roast Melania Trump. This is an audio thing that you guys are listening to. Obviously, you can't see my sweater, but I am wearing a shirt that I bought when I was tipsy because it kept being targeted advertised to me. It is a shirt that Comedy Central is selling, and it says, "Who gives a fuck about Christmas stuff and decoration, ? Which is a quote from our first lady taken from a secretly recorded tape by her best friend, Stephanie Winston Wolkoff. This is Melania just complaining about having to do a job.
Anything.
Having to do anything. She was whining about having to decorate the White House for Christmas. And I just think she deserves a roast. She's been a terrible first lady, and she has not been best. She hasn't been close to best.
Erin, this isn't even scripted. I was just going to make a be best joke.
Oh, man.
She had one job, and she was like, fuck Christmas. Who cares about Christmas? And I would just like to say, if we look at the sales at Walmart, Lowe's, any place that sells Christmas decorations, never before have places been sold out weeks before Christmas because so many people cared about their Christmas decorations. So fuck you, Melania, for always missing the point.
Lots of people give a fuck about Christmas stuff and decoration, Melania. Real quick, let's do some rapid fire roasts so we can get to the toast. You want to go?
I have two quick ones. Mm-hmm. I'd like to roast Ivanka for blaming farts on other people. I'd also like to roast Rudy for ignoring his farts altogether.
That's true. There were a lot of farts in this fart of a year. There's a fart news cycle for sure. I want to add to the Ivanka discourse that, you know, news reports that came out last week said that Ivanka had personally been interfering with CDC's response to COVID by offering unsolicited advice. I just think it's kind of funny that all of the right is freaking out right now about the first lady, the incoming first lady, having an actual doctorate and wanting to be called doctor, when they're not really saying very much about Ivanka Trump pretending to be a doctor. So that's
very true.
I mean, they're hypocrites. Who could have? I'm so surprised. I might take a nap. Two quick roasts. I would like to roast cruise ships and the entire cruise industry for being floating Petri dishes. It was funny when it was just giving everybody the shits. It is not funny when it's spreading COVID globally and they're chomping at the bit to resume operations. I think it's an industry that we should either let die or only let survive in a much more eco-friendly and a much less diseasey way. And on that note, I also want to roast selfish assholes who partied during COVID. And among those assholes, I'm including people who went ahead with plans for big weddings and people who are planning on going ahead with plans for big weddings in places where it is just not safe to have big weddings. I have a couple friends that have dealt with the awkwardness of having somebody that they're close to having a wedding during the pandemic and having to try to navigate how to tell them that they can't go. That sucks. It sucks that you're putting the people who attend in a position to get sick or make other people sick. And it sucks that you're putting people who won't attend in a position to have, you know, to ruin the friendship. Like, fuck you. That sucks. Do you have any more roasts?
No, that's pretty much it. Fuck 2020.
Two more quick ones. Stephen Miller and his wife had a kid, seemingly oblivious that their human child is a human child, just like the human children that he fought to have separated from their families at the Mexican border. Fuck Stephen Miller forever. And then Tyson Foods endangering the lives of their workers in a really disgusting way and really contributing to the spread of COVID. Okay, now I kind of want to like shake off, you know, like a dog will shake their head and their neck and their tail and their butt. Kind of want to shake off
snow everywhere.
Exactly. Snow and sometimes like mud. Luca loves to find the mud and play in it. Let's move on to toasts. What's the first toast, Alyssa?
I think the first toast might be because we love her so much for so many reasons. She gives us so many reasons all day, every day to love her. But we've had some pretty, in terms of like us personally having a year, we had great guests on our show this year. Like mm-hmm. we still have many dream guests, but we've had so many dream guests this year. And one of those dream guests was Elizabeth Warren, who mm-hmm. did us a massive solid and broke big news on Hysteria in October. And she told us what Bailey was going to be for Halloween. And mm-hmm. in the lighthearted love of 2020, I appreciate her for that. And I toast her for trusting us with that news.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Elizabeth Warren. I want to piggyback on that by toasting another Massachusetts yes. politician who we love, who has also been on the show this year, Ayanna Pressley. Ayanna Pressley is somebody who is only going to get bigger and more important, and that's for the good of everybody, honestly. In January, the thing I want to toast her for, though, doesn't have to do with her politics, which are great, and I really adore her presence as a congresswoman. But in January, she revealed that she has alopecia and has started appearing in public just bald and completely, like, brave, and I just think it's awesome because it's a condition that a lot of people have, and to see somebody so visible being so, you know, unapologetic about it is really good. You want to go another toast?
I have two quick ones that are Twitter related.
Okay.
I'd like to toast Cher for consistently trying to volunteer at the USPS on Twitter in Malibu, yes. California. There was nothing better than her all caps, mostly tweets about how no one will answer the phone and that when they talk to her, they don't know who she is. And she wasn't like mad about it so much. She was just trying to prove that she was like a real person. And then also Dionne Warwick for just showing up at the end of the year.
Oh my God. When she Dionne Warwick has been real top notch.
If you just follow Dionne Warwick and Leslie Jones watching cable news, it is the delightful side of Twitter. And Twitter does not have many delightful sides.
No, it's true. Twitter is an anxiety machine that we all are like, yes, give me more anxiety. I do owe my career to it, but it is terrible and it shouldn't exist. I want to toast, on the celebrity note, I want to toast Dolly Parton for generally being a beacon of light and happiness and hope. She's kind of low-key done so much like community service type stuff during her career. The latest was giving $1 million to early efforts to develop a vaccine. The FDA, the week that we're recording this, so by the time people hear it, the FDA will have probably approved the vaccine that she gave $1 million to help develop, which is amazing. And I think if Dolly Parton ran for president, she would win.
Do you have a favorite Dolly Parton Christmas song?
It's Hard Candy Christmas.
Mine's Christmas to Remember with Kenny Rogers.
Oh, that's a good one too. Hard Candy Christmas like hits
is
a
very
special,
good.
Yeah, hits a special place. Oh, Letitia James. We got to toast Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, who sued to dissolve the NRA in August. Wow, that woman is...
She's a fucking machine. I encourage everyone who thinks they've been productive during the day to look at her Twitter feed where she recounts all the things that she's done during the day, which just is investigation after investigation after suit. It is a thing of beauty. She's a warrior.
Yeah, she like pursues the truth. The way that like, and I don't want to like make this a minimizing comparison, but like, have you ever been with somebody like in a relationship with them and you're like convinced they're cheating and you go into like investigating mode and you
I've been there.
Yes. Right. And you like, know you have a hunch and you know that you're right and you will figure it out. I feel like she does that times a million as it relates to the interests of the people in New York.
She's and just you know really, what? When you have that hunch, you're almost never wrong.
You're right. You're right. You're almost never wrong when you have that hunch. Let's see. Oh, Savannah Guthrie. Oh. Gotta give a toast to Savannah Guthrie. She moderated a town hall with Trump when he wouldn't go to the debate with Joe Biden because he had COVID. It's a whole thing. But she was a competent moderator, and she really, I feel like that was kind of an inflection point in the campaign where, yeah. You know, everybody was sort of not really coming out and saying it. And then she came out and said it. So toast to Savannah Guthrie.
And then our friend Z-Way.
Oh yeah, we got to toast Z-Way. She's had a year. Let's see real quick. Oh, Katie Porter obviously has been mega important, and she and Dolly Parton could run for president together, and it would be game over. I want to toast Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes,
she's a new kind of politician who has really demonstrated. She's so good at communicating with people who feel disenfranchised by the system, but who mm-hmm. feel very passionate about issues. And it's so important to have her voice in the conversation. It's so important to have her holding the fire to the people who are in charge of the Democratic Party. I just think every single time I see her appear in public, I am more and more impressed with her and glad that we have her.
Totally. And it's like one of the fun sports of 2020 was watching old white men in the House and Senate consistently underestimate her, try to attack her on Twitter, and then get completely owned in just like such low hanging fruit, but she just nails it on the head every time. And also, I think that she's one of the few Democrats that's really branched out and tried to figure out like where and how to communicate with people, and will always experiment. And it's just like good for her.
Mm-hmm. Good for her. I'm so glad that we have her. Some non-politician people. I want to toast the TikTok kids who were angry at Donald Trump for threatening to ban TikTok. And so they requested tons and tons of tickets to his rally in Tulsa. The rally in Tulsa in June was one of the first large public events anywhere in the country after the first lockdown of the pandemic. It was held in a venue that seats 19,000 people. The plan was to have no social distancing. What happened was only 6,000 people showed up, and the president looked like a fool. So I don't know how much of it was the TikTok kids, but I love their spirit. I love their spirit.
I would like to toast also non-politicians. Chef Jose Andreas and Tom Ooh. Colicchio and Guy Fieri. I had to toast these three dudes, the mayor of Flavortown. They have done more in this year than the federal government to help feed America's starving people in conjunction with organizations like Feeding America. And they're just like out there fucking trying to get it done. And they're not the people who are posting pictures of themselves on Instagram. Like, here's the check I gave. They're like actually doing the work. And I just say thank you, especially at the holidays. They're just trying to make sure everybody has a meal.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I got to admit it. I think growth is good. And I'm going to admit some growth here. Mm. I was one of those people that was sort of like, you know, snidely dismissive of Guy Fieri because I don't like the type of food that he cooks and eats on his show. But like, he's a good person and he's doing good for his community. And I was maybe a bit of an asshole by being a jerk about him.
Look, we all see the light different times.
That's true. The Guy Fieri light. I'm just picturing like a devotion candle with Guy Fieri's picture on it.
I might have to make one.
I'll make one over the holidays. I don't have anything else to do. Let's see. Oh, Rebecca Jones, the former Florida official who circumvented her state government to get information about COVID out to the masses heroically. She put herself in the line of the governor's wrath in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, who is just a fucking idiot. And she's just like been, I think people like her standing up are so important to combating the stupidity in charge of a lot of places. So toast to Rebecca Jones.
Who else how can we not talk about the ladies of Georgia?
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about the ladies of Georgia.
Erin, you talk about the ladies of Georgia.
Well, we are interviewing one of them today. Georgia flipped blue for the first time since, what, 1988?
Yep.
The presidential election? So, yeah, we have to thank women like Stacey Abrams, Latosha Brown, and Nsay Ufot, who we interview later in the show. So everybody should listen to that. They did so much work on the ground, understood how to get people to vote, and got people to the polls. And they won a state where everything was stacked against them. And they flipped it. I was shocked when Georgia went blue. I think Stacey Abrams was not.
And for a woman so busy, Stacey Abrams took the time to not only come on Hysteria, but she brought a little bit of her alter ego, Selena Montgomery, with her, which was a true joy.
Yeah. Wait, is it Selena Montgomery or is that the name of the vice president from Veep?
No, Selena Montgomery is her romance novelist pen name. Selena Myers is VP.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Guys,
that's really funny.
So
that's a funny mistake. let's see. One more person that I think, or one more group. This is a big group.
What?
Before I get to that, WNBA players. Really on the front edge of integrating social activism and sports and really not backing down from people who were trying to be confrontational, like Senator Kelly Loeffler, who hopefully will not be a senator after January. The last group is a big group, but we've talked about them on the show. Nurses, teachers, doctors, and hospital and school employees, and all of the people in professions that tend to be kind of female heavy, who were put on the front lines, who were leaned on a lot this year, who are probably exhausted. I know that like toasting is not enough. You should get paid more and people should respect you more. But I just think that, you know, without those people, society totally falls apart. And hopefully moving forward, we can treat them as important as they actually are to society. Also, the mothers and fathers, but if we're being honest, mostly mothers, who suddenly had to take on way more than they should have this year, like doing homeschooling their kids and working remotely and, you know, like a million ands that got added onto the title of being a parent. I cannot imagine how hard that was for you. And I'm like, I mean, hopefully 2021, I hope you get to go to a spa. I hope you get to go into a
just
room.
Just be alone for a day.
Just a whole day alone in a room where nobody tries to bug you about anything. I would love that. And also, final toast. I learned from Facebook that one of my high school classmates was the first person to administer a COVID vaccine in Minnesota. So a toast to my former classmate, Jamie. I'm not going to give her last name, but yeah, I was pretty excited for her. Pretty
That's cool. Awesome.
Yay. Okay. I think we toasted and roasted a lot.
I feel good. I feel like we really like shook 2020 off.
Yeah, shook it off like a dog shaking off some water in an entryway. Okay, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we have an interview with Nsay Ufot, who is helping flip Georgia blue and hopefully will help flip the Senate blue as well. Welcome back. Today, we are so pleased to welcome Nsay Ufot. She's the Chief Executive Officer of the New Georgia Project and the New Georgia Project Action Fund, which seeks to register all eligible unregistered citizens of color in the state of Georgia. And she's one of the many women we have to thank for helping flip Georgia blue. So welcome, Nsay. We're so glad to have you.
Hi, Erin. Happy to be here.
Okay. So first of all, massive congratulations to you and the New Georgia Project for all the hard work you put in flipping Georgia blue for Biden.
Thank you.
So I am dying to know, when did you realize the state had flipped? And can you walk me through where you were, how you reacted, and how the other people working with you reacted to it?
Okay, if I'm going to be very honest, it was election night.
Really?
Yes. Because we had a sense of where the outstanding ballots were, and we had seen what the margins were. And so we had already gone into ballot chasing, provisional ballot chasing election protection mode, right? With the idea being that for 3 days after the election, that people who their absentee ballots had been rejected or they had been given provisional ballots and they were eligible to vote a regular ballot, that they had 3 days after the election day to get their ballot cured so that their vote actually counted. And so my entire staff, they're going to be so upset with me, but my entire staff was like freaking out. Like, people were really sad and in their feelings. And I kept saying, like, we have to normalize not having a result on election night. That today is the last day to vote. Today is election day. It's not results day. Mm-hmm. Right. And that we have to give the process mm-hmm. time to work. We had recruited 4,500 volunteers, voter protection and election protection volunteers, to observe and monitor voting at about 250 polling locations across the state and to monitor counting. And so we felt pretty confident that we were going to, at the very least, know how they were going to steal it. at the worst case scenario, mm-hmm. we were going to know exactly how the election was stolen. But best case scenario was that every vote was counted and there was a smooth and transparent process. I think that when I like knew and like when the world knew, it all feels like a blur. And I don't think that I can be blamed. We've had 3 official recounts mm-hmm. at taxpayers' expense. Mm-hmm. I remember feeling elated. I remember feeling a little vindicated. I would like to think that I am mature and like above all of that. But I definitely did like an end zone dance. we've been talking about the South and the opportunities in the Deep South for so long. And like the numbers are there. The math is there. I think that we just had trouble with the narrative. That people did not believe that, you know, a state that heavily, that 1 out of 3 voters are Black, that a multiracial, multi-ethnic, multilingual, progressive majority exists in the Deep South. I think overcoming those narratives was a challenge, but I still pinch myself. I'm still super excited. And I'm still looking to prove that it wasn't a fluke.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that next test. We're moving close to the Senate runoffs. There's already been record-breaking early voting. According to Fair Fight, it's 23% higher than on day one of early voting in the presidential. And that turnout is massive. So to what do you attribute this surge in turnout to, when in November there were more votes cast for Biden than there were for Ossoff or Warnock?
So a couple things. One, we'll take the second question first. Warnock ran against 20 doors. So there were 21 people challenging and contesting in the special election for United States Senate. And so with the split, that's a real thing, right? Like divided loyalties within parties and all along the ideological spectrum. I think undercounting is a real thing, right? So people knew that they wanted to like vote for president and then walked out. It's not a massive trend, but I think that it can account for some of that. And then from what we've seen, we can attribute the increase in participation to a lot of things. One, organizing, right? The idea that, from Georgia leading the country in jump in youth voter registration from 2016 to 2020, and like the number one country and number one state in the country, a 35% jump. I think we have the pandemic, right? That there's nothing that focuses the mind like the credible threat of death. That you had a president telling us to drink bleach. You have a governor lying about what he knew about the pandemic, about the coronavirus. And it's, again, not lost on Georgians that our governor's mansion is less than 3 miles away from the CDC's headquarters. So really. We have a governor that sued cities for trying to pass mask ordinances. We have 8 hospitals in rural Georgia that have closed. There was a hospital in rural Georgia that closed days before the election. And so, like, not only are people still having babies, people still fighting cancer, but ICU beds are running out because of COVID. Oh, and by the way, hospitals tend to be the largest employers in the communities where they are. And so, like, there's a sense that, you know, here's an opportunity to elect some folks who are accountable to our communities, who know what's happening in Georgia, who understand the hard, and who will go to D.C. to do the people's work. I think the protest this summer had a lot to do with turnout. I watched young people get radicalized and start to, you know, ask questions about municipal budgets and spending on police and like, oh, wait, the mayor does what? City council is responsible for who? Okay. And, you know, Ahmaud Arbery was a young man in Brunswick, Georgia, who was murdered. And the district attorney had videotaped evidence of his murder and held on to it for 74 days. Before an international sort of campaign of pressure to release those videos. And then she finally charged his murderers. Young folks in Brunswick, in Glynn County, Georgia, in Southeast Georgia, across the rural Black Belt saw that. We registered to vote, people to vote. We had teach-ins. And now Jackie Johnson is unemployed. And while I don't celebrate anyone losing their job, what she doesn't need to do is be doing the people of Glynn County's work, that she has fallen down on her job. And so the young people that we've registered, that we organize with in Southeast Georgia, see that. They've seen that power, that power that they have to fire someone. And so, yeah, I think it's pandemic. I think it's protests. And that is why we saw elevated participation at the polls.
Yeah, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue have very fireable personalities. Like,
right.
You know, like they're very detestable people. You
fireable
couldn't design.
Faces.
Yeah, resting fireable face. You know, it's really interesting to hear you talk about local and state elections and the sort of like crash course in civics that so many people have gotten thanks to like people like you on the ground organizing and thanks to like the news media kind of like elevating stories that weren't being elevated before. I want to talk about women's role in this kind of awakening that we're experiencing right now. Like women in particularly, and particularly Black women, have played a huge role in organizing and flipping Georgia blue and building political power in the state. Why do you think that there are so many women at the center of this?
Right. So one, I was just going to comment on your earlier comment about sort of the idea that civics has been elevated in our public discourse. I think part of it is because it's being attacked as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like we now have to talk about it because what is it? You don't know what you've missed until it's gone. And so thinking about like how we've taken voting and our democratic norms for granted, small d democratic norms for granted. And like when we see somebody like really just spit at them and say, F your norms, it really makes you realize what is at stake and like what are protected by laws and what are protected by just agreements that we have not to be awful to each other. And so I think recognizing that, people sort of rising up using their voices. I would also say that in this moment, I think that because there has been a sort of outsized credit given to this country's pale, male, stale minority, that they take up more space than they are a credit, like that they deserve and that they should in public life. And so I think that the idea that like women and women of color and Black women sort of occupying this space, showing up loudly and boldly, but also super effectively and efficiently, despite people sort of denying our contributions, despite the underinvestment. I think it's just, I don't know if there's nothing magical about it, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's labor. It's hard work. It is a fidelity to our communities and sort of an unshaking, unwavering, unyielding sort of faith in what we can build together, a recognition. Like, I think that people are, it shocks me that people are shocked that there are progressives in the South. Right? Like, literally, that is how we survive. Like, an organizing culture where we take care of each other, where there's multiracial, multilingual, multigenerational coalitions. It's literally how you survive under extreme oppressive conditions, right? We have people that are running for United States Senate right now who refuse to acknowledge that President-elect Biden won. That the Electoral College has voted, right? That we have people who are encouraging violence against poll workers and organizers and folks who run voting rights groups. And so the way that we have survived, the way that groups like the New Georgia Project have survived, has been because of women's leadership, women of color's leadership, Black women's leadership, and our commitment to each other.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So I'm going to cut to the chase.
Yeah.
What's going to happen on January 5th? What's your gut feeling telling you? And second part of that question is, what is your plan if we take back the Senate, and what's your plan if we don't?
So my gut feeling is that we're going to pull this out. I'm excited about it. That my gut feeling is that we have to. It is the nature of battleground state politics, right? That the elections are determined by who shows up and whose votes get counted. And so we're doing everything that we can in this moment to make sure that all of our folks show up, right? And the numbers are bearing that out. They're like, our plan is working. Mm-hmm. And then whose votes get counted, right? So I'm hoping that, you know, talking to folks like you, but also just the thousands of volunteers that we have to do voter protection and election protection, that we can keep eyes and ears on every element, on every step of the process that make it that much more difficult to steal an election. And so I think that if people are allowed unfettered, unmolested, uninterfered with access to the ballot, that Georgians will come out again and make history.
That's so exciting. From your lips to God's ears, you know, like that would be so exciting to watch.
And in terms of who wins or if we win or lose, I think our plans for 2021 going forward are the same. That we have a very clear agenda that centers racial justice and environmental justice, right? That like there needs to be an increase in the minimum wage, that we need to explore the tenets of the Green New Deal. That Medicare for all or some sort of universal health care. Georgians desperately need it. That those don't change regardless of who's in the Senate. Just knowing who is on the other side of the bargaining table is helpful, but our agenda is the same.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of environmental justice, how about Deb Haaland, huh?
Yes.
So exciting.
I know. I'm so used to managing my emotions as these cabinet positions get rolled out. So to not have to equivocate and to say boldly, good job. It feels good.
Yeah. We're excited over here too. We're big Deb Haaland fans, if you can be a fan.
Which also flags that Daniel Blackman is running for a public service commission. So we spend a lot of time and attention talking about the two U.S. Senate races on the ballot in Georgia. But for any Georgians that are listening, there's a third runoff, and that's for the public service commission. They regulate the utilities across the state. There are, the power plant that manages our how much we pay for our utility bills every month. That is such an important seat. It's such an important seat in this moment. And the Georgians have an opportunity to elect Daniel Blackman, as well as Reverend Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, the millennial senator.
That's exciting. So how can our listeners get involved in the Senate runoff campaigns in a productive way, whether or not they live in Georgia?
Yes. Visit us. So NGPAF.com. Dot org. All of our information is there. You can give us your pennies so that we can put it into ads. We can put it into our staff. We have a plan of knocking on 1 million doors by the end of the year. We've already crossed the 700,000 door threshold. And so even in the middle of a pandemic, after deep consultation with public health experts and our staff and our board, we're out here trying to have high quality conversations. And so visit us at ngpaf.org to figure out ways to plug into our volunteer efforts, even if you're not in Georgia, or to invest in the work of building back better.
Oh, what a great way to end this great conversation. I could probably sit here and talk to you for hours.
Thank you.
Nse Ufot of the New Georgia Project and the New Georgia Project Action Fund, thank you so much for joining us, and we will... All eyes on Georgia, January 5th.
All eyes on Georgia. Thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Power up your life with superior brain and body nutrition products from IQBar. Their plant protein bars are the perfect low-carb breakfast. Their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks replenish electrolytes. And their IQ Joe Mushroom Coffees will keep you focused all day long.
Start each day right with IQBar's brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. IQBar empowers doers with superior brain and body nutrition. All their products are entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. And today, Hysteria listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text Hysteria to 64,000.
One thing I love about IQ Bar is, first of all, right now it's really dry where I am.
Oh, okay.
It is hard for me to stay hydrated. I'll just be going through my day and I'll be like, why am I so like...
Parched.
I'm parched. I'm in a bad mood. I feel like I'm going to pass out. And it's, you got to drink some water. You got to stay hydrated. I really like their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks because it allows me to... rehydrate myself at a time when I feel like the atmosphere is trying to take all my moisture away.
Well, and sometimes you need more than just water.
Sometimes you need more than just water. I also love IQ bars because I love a portable breakfast.
I love a grab-and-go breakfast, no dishes.
Love something I can walk around holding and eating. I like something I can eat in my car without endangering the lives of me and every other motorist on the road. A breakfast burrito, not the safest thing to eat behind the wheel. IQ bar, go ahead and do it. Good for you, great ingredients, helps you stay focused and alert throughout the day, and and you don't have to dirty any dishes. Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks.
And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text Hysteria to 64,000. Get your discount, text Hysteria to 64,000. That's Hysteria to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Okay, we're back. We've reached the part of the show where we're joined by more people to help Alyssa and I feel less alone. But because this is a holiday week show, rather than doing like a, you know, mailbag episode where we just kind of phone it in, we're going opposite and we're bringing extra people in because we know you're probably not spending the holidays in as big a group as you would prefer. You're probably not with your families. And so, you know, let us be your family. Eat some pie, eat some turkey, and tuck in. I want to bring in the rest of the panel. First one, she is a writer, comedian, and she's recording from a castle in Illinois. It's Tien Tran. Hello, Tien.
Hello. Thank you for letting everyone know I live in a castle. I've been trying to keep that a secret because I want to be more relatable.
Did you guys get snow?
We got a dusting. We got a nice dusting. Nothing too crazy, though. Like, I think an inch. It's very nice. Oh,
that's basically just like a powdering.
It's a powdering.
You got a little powdering.
A nice foundation.
Oh, that's good. Hopefully you'll get dumped on before Christmas because that's fun. Up next, she is an author, a TV writer, and a Love Actually apologist. Please welcome Dana Schwartz.
So happy to be here.
So happy to have you, Dana. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I think, you know, relatively to the year, pretty okay. I have a book deadline. A book is due the first week of January. So this is a really nice interacting with human beings instead of being like in my writing pod.
Do you feel like in your writing pod, you sometimes like lose the ability to talk?
Yeah. Is that obvious with how I'm interacting with people right
now? You sound great. I did not mean to sound like Amy Klobuchar being like, hello.
I do have my local government experience and I love trains.
And then last but not least, she's a comedian, actor, writer, and anti-germ warrior. It's Naomi Ekperigin. Hello, Naomi.
Hello. Can we talk about how many people came into my mentions after last time I was on the I Feel Petty? Uh-huh. These people came very serious and it was like, ma'am, the segment is called I Feel Petty. Not I feel ready to engage in a serious debate about library books on the street.
Oh, I'm sorry, Naomi. I'm sorry that you had to survive that. You're a survivor and an inspiration to everybody for having to look
Thank
at
you.
Mentions.
Thank you for saying it, okay, on recorded media. Thank you.
Let's get into talking about, you know, this is about a wrap on 2020. 2020 sucks. Anybody who had a good 2020 better shut the fuck up about it because it wasn't. Everybody, the bad 2020s were so bad that nobody needs to hear about your 2020 being good. Now, that being said, Naomi, mm-hmm. were there any good things that happened this year? Like, were there any high points for you that stuck out? Or did you learn any lessons that you find will be valuable?
Well, I guess a high point was not getting COVID. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty high point, I think, for all. You know what I mean? Like, if anyone didn't get COVID, that's amazing. So mm-hmm. I think we should celebrate that. What did I learn? I guess I love my partner. You know what I mean? You know, sometimes you don't know. And then you're left in the house together for 9 months straight. And you realize, okay, mm-hmm. I don't want to kill you in your sleep. That's great.
That's a good lesson. So you didn't become infected with a deadly virus.
Yes.
And you didn't murder your partner. Those are positives, definite positives.
Yes.
Alyssa, what were your high points from the year, if any?
Well, Erin, I think we've talked ad nauseum about how proud I am of myself for being self-sufficient. I've learned how to do things in the yard. I have pretended to be Ma Ingalls for extended periods of time over the summer. And now that we have 20 inches of snow, you know that I'm living the episode where they're like stuck in the snowdrift on Christmas Eve because Ms. Beetle lets them out of school early. I made 500 jars of jams and I actually put some fucking labels on them and I'm going to do things with them. And I got you guys. So yay.
That's really, you know, I think that like you really moved up. If there was like an apocalypse team draft, you know how like the NBA draft,
you want to be
you
on would my
be
team.
You'd be a first
there.
Round pick.
I'm moving
you
there.
Guys, mm-hmm. Because I will preserve our food. Yes. I will pick our food. I will keep our food alive.
Yes.
And regale you with funny stories at the end of the day. It's like full service. It's like like apocalypse spa.
And you have a pink Christmas tree.
Two. I have two pink trees.
Two pink Christmas trees. Yeah. Dana.
Yes.
What have been some high points for you from this hellish year?
Well, I have to echo what Naomi said and say, like, I felt very fortunate that I didn't get COVID and that my family was healthy and safe. So that was, I think, the big one. I fell in love this year, which was fun. Wow, that was sort of an exciting thing.
It you fell in love in a hopeless place.
I literally did. I had one of those mythical COVID romances where it started on a pod. He invited me on his podcast, which is the most 2020 way to meet someone. And then I think COVID actually really helped like bring the relationship forward because before we met in person, we texted a lot and then we started talking on the phone a lot. We had like hour-long phone conversations like the olden days. Mm-hmm. And then when we met
in
person,
rom-com, Dana.
I know there was that like camaraderie and yeah, it was really nice. I mean, knock on wood again, but that was definitely the bright spot of this year for me.
That's so cute.
That's really nice. Mm-hmm. Tien, same question for you.
I want to echo what everyone has said. Yeah, same thing. Didn't get sick. And also my family members and friends, thankfully, have also not gotten sick. I am normally long distance with my partner, and this kind of pushed us together. So same thing. Don't want to kill my partner. It's been great. I feel like now we're like absolutely no more long distance. But I do like to wake up every morning and be like, we're seeing each other 24/7. How does it feel? We get zero breaks from each other. And the other thing is that I'm grateful for is that Dana started a podcast, a separate one about called Popcorn Book Club, which sadly no longer is going to be moving forward. But I read books this year for like the first time. And apparently I only do that when I get paid to do it. So if anybody is out there wanting to pay me to read books, I'm very good at it. I've learned how to do it. Ready to go.
You know what? Reading books was a huge like sanity saver this year. I think I read, not to brag, but to brag because I've done literally nothing else. I think I read like 70 books.
Oh my God. That's insane. That's like two plus books a week.
It's like a little more than one a week. Yeah.
What?
Like
what?
It's because, okay, so this is the trick. If you sit down with a timer and you set it for 20 minutes and you don't look at your phone for 20 minutes and you just read, like then you get a good head of steam going in. And usually when the 20-minute timer goes off, you want to set it again for another 20 minutes. So if you've been reading for 40 minutes, that's like between 40 and 50 pages. You're already 50 pages in. If you read 50 pages a day, it's not that hard to finish. Like 50 pages a day, 300-page book, 6 days a book. Easy.
Okay. I was like proud of myself. I was going to be like, I read 7 books this year.
Yeah. We, for the book club, we did like a book a month.
Yeah. I think that's a lot more manageable for people that have to leave the house.
Who are not as good as Erin. That's more manageable for people who are not as good as Erin.
No, it's for people that have to leave the house for any reason or have any responsibilities besides themselves. But it's like, yeah, I think books are a really nice escape. I read a couple that like really made you. Did you read Mexican Gothic?
I don't know what you're saying.
I heard that is very good.
It's like a romp. It's like a 1950s. It's set in the 1950s in Mexico, and it's about this like plucky heroine who's like a young socialite who goes to a mysterious mansion in the jungle to figure out why her cousin is going crazy.
Ooh.
And it's like, and then by the end, it's like a full-on batshit insane horror novel. I cannot recommend it enough if you want to forget that you're where you are.
Erin, I think of you as a plucky heroine. That's like funny.
I agree with that.
Of you as a plucky heroine who was a socialite. You know what I mean? Like this is like that whole, that description sounds very much like how I envision you. So I feel
If by socialite you mean that when I was little, my brother and I used to trap barn cat kittens and train them, and then that's what my socialite life kind of was. Let's talk a little bit about Christmas or the holidays if you don't celebrate Christmas. What do you normally do for, you know, your holiday celebration with your family, if anything? And how is this year going to be different? Dana, I'm going to start with you. Happy Hanukkah, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's the seventh night, but this is sort of when it trails off and you kind of forget to light the candles, but it's fine. Usually my Christmas, if I was home with my family, which unfortunately I haven't gotten to do this year, we would go down to Chinatown in Chicago and have a big Chinese Jewish family dinner and then go see a movie together. Like that is the classic, like if everyone's home for the holidays, you go out, you have a big meal and you go see a movie. Like that is a good Christmas memory. And last year in Los Angeles without my intermediate family, but I also did that. I went out for Chinese food and saw Little Women in theaters, which was a great Christmas. Mm. And this year, I think my boyfriend and I, if we can, are going to drive up in a straight shot to Portland to visit his family, if we can do that 15-hour drive. But it'll be a different Christmas for me, a sort of COVID non-Chinese food, non-movie theater Christmas.
That sounds fun. Sounds like a nice. Yeah, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
Tien, how about you?
Normally, we kind of spend it on the East Coast where all my aunts and uncles live. And so we'll have like a huge Vietnamese food feast, which is the best. The food is amazing. There's also always like a talent show for my nieces and nephews.
What's your talent? What's your talent?
No, I've grown out of it. It's for like
they perform. You performed for them.
No. Oh my God. No.
She ends up there juggling, spinning plates.
My little niece is like such a ham. And so they like the younger ones will sing songs. Last year, I think she sang, Shape of You, that very, do you know that song? Who it's the redhead
Ed Sheeran.
Oh, yes. Okay. She sang that.
I'll be the straight white girl here. It's Ed Sheeran.
Thank you. And that year my aunts and uncles tried to essentially bully me into doing stand up after her, which was horrifying because she crushed and I don't want to follow that. And then since I said no, my other uncle was like, why don't you break dance? Because I guess I used to do that when I was...
Did you used to break dance?
I can do a coffee grinder. I can do a little top rock. I can spin on my back. A soft worm. These are all things I could have... when I was younger. But this year, I'll be spending it with my partner's family. She lives 3 hours south, and we're just going to have like a very nice beef tenderloin. There's a new baby in the family, so there's going to be a lot of nice like first Christmas moments. So I'm going to be helping to curate a memory she won't have.
teach her how to break dance. She won't.
I'm gonna teach her how to
break
dance.
It's like, I wonder if it's like, you know, when you throw a baby into a swimming pool, supposedly they will just instinctively learn how to swim. I wonder if it's the same with break dancing. Like you just kind of spin a baby on the ground and it'll just like them. Yeah, it'll just
spin them like a dreidel.
I'll send you a little video of me just spinning this baby.
Yeah, it does feel like their gravity over. Like the center of mass of a baby would keep them spinning.
We have to find out.
Yes. Okay. We're going to find out. Please do not call the authorities. You're not actually going to do this. Alyssa, I feel like you're going to have a real Christmassy Christmas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Explain.
Guys.
Two trees.
Was that a compliment or was that? No, I'm just kidding.
No, a compliment. That's very my Ingalls is having like a Christmas.
No,
Christmas.
It's. So instead of like a lot of things, like one of my favorite things to do for years and years would be to go to the Four Seasons and get mulled wine at the big Christmas tree. It's like my favorite holiday-ish thing, or like to go to Bergdorf and buy one new ornament for the tree. And I'm making a lot of things this year, you guys. And the reason that they haven't shipped out yet is because Amazon is slow bringing me boxes with which to ship them. But no, every year since I was maybe 7 years old, the whole family would go out for Christmas Eve dinner. And it's always like super cozy. It's a French bistro. It's the same place. And they are closed. And we're just hoping that they're going to make it through pandemic. And so I am making beef bourguignon like Julia Child.
Oh my God.
We'll see. So that is my, so that's like my gift to the family. I hope they're listening. because that's my
Are
gift.
You going to have mulled wine at home? Are you going to DIY mulled wine?
Yes. So I make a sangria. That's very tasty because it's like the mulled, for some reason, mulled at home just like doesn't work. I don't know. Maybe it works for other people. And if people are listening and they want to send me a good recipe because I've never found one. But no, it's sangria and I'm going to make dinner rolls and beef bourguignon. And then... And I'm making cookies today that I hope are still fresh by next week.
Alyssa is one of these people that is thriving in quar.
Yeah.
She is somebody who's like, you know what? The pandemic unlocked something in me. I am thriving. That is what I'm hearing.
No, you know
what? You can't see her right now, but she's wearing a thick red cardigan and just talking about Christmas feels like.
Wait, and no, you know like, what it is, you guys? Is that for me, when I have thrived in a job, it's been some place where I achieved something every single day where I left and I was like, okay, here's what I achieved today. And for me during quarantine, it was important for me to find things where I could look and be like, okay, I did things, because otherwise I will genuinely get depressed if I feel like I'm not doing anything. So yeah, guys, I just got on YouTube, tutorialed the shit out of some baking stuff.
I feel like the beef bourguignon is like a very like mid-century fancy dinner.
Yes.
Like it's like one of the dinners that like that endured in a cookbook alongside of several recipes for like savory gelatins. You know, like
that is exactly what I'm going for, dude. That's exactly it. It's like, let's just take it back in time with our shiny bright ornaments on the tree and we'll update the glug and mulled wine with some sangria.
Okay, and the mulled wine though, Trader Joe's has a really? Mulled wine like mix, like a juice. It's like winter wassail, they call it.
Really?
And yeah, you just follow the, it's just like you pour it in and you pour some red wine in there. You can throw in some like brandy and then two cinnamon sticks and heat it up. And it is, I think, good.
In the country, there's no Trader Joe's for 65 miles. That's why I've become so self-sufficient, you guys.
Yeah. So
Trader
Joe,
go ahead.
I'm not a big mulled wine expert, but Humblebrag, I went to Denmark and they had a thing called glog, which is
glog,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's like, but it has like almonds and raisins at the bottom. So you drink it and then you just like have a little snack.
Glug is delicious.
So good.
Maybe I'll make glug.
I can't find that here. That's what I was saying, is why doesn't Trader Joe's have that? I want glug.
Yeah, I'm going to find us a recipe.
Dana, if you find us a recipe, I'll also make glug. We'll make it in parallel.
Naomi, what are you and Andy doing for Christmas, and what do you normally do?
Well, normally I'd be in my mom's house, and we also do the Christmas Eve dinner, but it's definitely not a French bistro. We like to go to whatever's open in the mall. I prefer the Cheesecake Factory. All right. I just like, because my mom's in Jersey. So like, I'm into like, give me like a suburban moment. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to be at the Cheesecake Factory. I want to be at the Pancake Sweatshop. You know, I just eat all that stuff. And so we would do that at night, you know, just dinner early. And then we would go back. You'd wrap the presents, you know, everyone kind of like, you go away while I wrap your present. You know, everyone takes turns like leaving the room. And then the next day, always, again, like, we're all adults, so it's not like we need to do all this. Like, you know, we decorate the tree. My mom loves to decorate a tree. And then we, the next day, honey, you got to see whatever Blockbuster is dropping. And that's, like, it. It's, like, I always eat, like, a waffle in the morning or pancake with a bacon. And bacon is a Christmas treat. I don't really eat bacon much, but, ooh, crispy bacon. Mm. And then I have a little crispy bacon. Then I get myself together. We go see a Blockbuster. So then we can be together without having to talk to each other. That's the best. And then you're done. And I really miss that. I miss, like, you know, I've been saying this whole time, I don't really miss restaurants, like, going to eat in them. But this will be the time I do. Because that's, like, the one thing we kind of all do where it's like, we're just going to eat some garbage tonight. Mm-hmm. And, like, just, you know, and then lay on the couch after and digest as a family.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'm going to miss this year. So the Ryan family has a bunch of weird holiday traditions. We all used to go over to my grandma and grandpa Ryan's house, and there was like, my dad was one of six, and his oldest brother, I think I mentioned on the show before, his oldest brother had Down syndrome, and he lived with my grandparents his whole life. And so when Stuart was still alive, Stuart was like kind of the most beloved person in the family. Like, whatever, everybody was like, he was really awesome. And everybody just kind of like, whatever Stuart wanted to do, that was kind of like what we did. And one Christmas, someone was listening to like a Christmas album that had, I think it was maybe John Coltrane, had a bunch of saxophone solos. And we just watched Stuart pretend to play the saxophone along for like 20 minutes. But we also used to do like as an adult, I would go home, stay at my parents' house. This is actually gonna be the first year of my life that I'm not going to wake up on Christmas morning at my parents' house.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It sucks, but it's like, you know, we'll do two Christmases next year. We'll
exactly.
do like
that's how I feel about 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go home. I haven't been home in the fall for a really long time. I'll go home in the fall and then I'll go home again in Christmas. But yeah, we usually like Christmas Eve. So nobody in my family can like sit still. So we kind of are grazers. My mom will just like put the food out and everybody just kind of like eats when they want. And it's usually like cheeses.
Oh, I like that.
And it's like, yeah, it's like a Wisconsin smorgasbord. It's like hard yellow cheeses and Ritz crackers, cranberry spreads, wild rice dips, you know, like that sort of stuff.
Wait a minute.
Stuff.
What's that?
All right. That's coming.
Like
and
that,
yeah. I'm coming over to the Ryan's
you
for
can
Christmas.
Put
this sounds
rice
fun.
Into dips.
You can make anything into a dip if you believe in it. But my mom would like, yeah, it's just, I don't know if we've ever had
Is it like rice and mayo? What's going on?
What is it? Guys, I found it. I found it on the internet.
What do you dip in it? Like a cracker, like a hard cracker. But, you put it on like
carbs.
Like
guys, carbs?
Guys, cheesy wild rice dip.
Ooh.
Cream cheese, smoked cheddar, wild rice, some herb seasoning, Worcestershire, horseradish, and mayo. Does that sound about right, Erin?
That sounds about right.
That's okay.
I have truly never
making it.
And you dip crackers in the rice?
Yeah, you take a little knife and you put some on a cracker and you.
This sounds white delicious.
This is Caucasian culture.
This is what this I was.
And you love it, Naomi.
This is what I'm learning. Not when you say it. See, when you said everything in it, I'm out, right? But if I just saw it, I would eat it. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Like, when you tell me like cream cheese and mayonnaise together.
What? I was going to say, was that the repellent super white part of it?
Yes, together.
Okay.
You know, it's like one or the other, honey. But if you put them both in, I'm like, no. But like, you know, if I just saw it, I would get into it at the party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel the same way. Plus the misuse of rice. But again, everyone's being creative.
I'm making this. Wild rice is a treat. It is expensive, but it's a treat if you can find it.
But you can't taste it. You're wasting it in a dish of cheesy mayonnaise.
No, guys, I will be the judge when I make
texture.
This.
It provides. It's like a little crunchy because it's wild rice. It just trust me on this. So like we would just kind of graze. We usually just kind of watch. Keep a low buzz going the whole day. Everybody's always it's a very Wisconsin holiday, so everyone's kind of nursing a beer or a glass of wine. We're not really a hard liquor family, but we'll just spend all day drinking Nuclear Spotted Cows and then go to bed at like 8 p.m. because it gets dark at like 4 p.m. because
right.
It's like above the 45th parallel. So sometimes we'll go on a walk at 3 p.m. as the sun is going down my parents' like icy road. My parents got snowshoes last year. Josh and I put snowshoes on and went on a walk in the woods with the dogs. My parents have a big dog named Lyle. my dad wanted to name him John after himself, but my mom was like, you can't name a dog your name. So I mean, like, I will miss being with my family. This year, I think we're probably going to drive around and see some Christmas lights. There's some places in Los Angeles, some neighborhoods that really go all out.
Oh.
I'll text you offline, Naomi, and let you know. Like it's a fun like holiday treat, and you can sit for all of it.
Yeah, I like lights. I like lights. I will say a couple places in our neighborhood are kind of like decorated their trees. I really love a canopy of lit trees. That's what I discovered about myself. And maybe Dana, this does connect to Love Actually. But I love a canopy of lit trees. And like when I'm under them, I'm like, I literally said to Andy 2 days ago, I was like, you should propose to me again under these lit trees. he's like, no.
There's a street called Christmas Tree Lane in Altadena where they decorate these big tall trees that are surrounding drive down it. It's like a mile, a little bit more than a mile long. It's really cool.
Ooh, thank you for letting me know that.
I would like to put out a warning though. If you are paying for a light experience, be careful, because I did that last year with my family and there was like a light parade and we sat in our car for 3 hours. I think it was like $20 a car and the light parade was terrible. Like, I think it was like a few badly placed elves. There was like there was like an extreme X game section where Santa was jumping over things, but the lights weren't working. The lights were not working. It was a very sad, weird.
Oh no.
Light.
So sad.
So just be careful.
Right.
That's great advice. If you like, why don't pay for something you can just drive by and look at usually. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of places, like if you Google best places to look at holiday lights, if you live in a city that you didn't grow up in, you can find it pretty easily. But I want to move on quickly before we have to let Alyssa go off to her day of Ma Inglesing. What are some of your goals for 2021?
I haven't dared to dream in so long that, you know, I just like, it's like, that question is just very heavy because I literally have just divorced myself from outcomes for the last 9 months in a way. I don't, you know, just basically how the year is gone. I'm like, don't like plan much. So
yeah,
I don't know if anyone else has a dream. I'd love to hear it.
Read more, a la Erin Ryan. I thought I read enough and now I hear that and I'm like, okay, up my reading game. Currently in the process, I'm moving in. My boyfriend and I are moving in together.
What is going on?
I know.
This is insane.
I I know. That's clearly.
No, it's great.
This COVID relationship.
It's a COVID relationship. But right now I'm like planning on moving and like I'm organizing everything. So now my New Year's goal is like figure that out and do it. I've never lived with someone before. Like figure that out and do it in a organized, semi-cohesive way.
Let me just give you my only advice for a straight woman who's about to move in with a boyfriend for the first time. When you figure, if you both trade off cooking duties, really try to like positively reward cleaning while you cook. Because guys, men don't do that. Men don't do that. And you will leave the, you know, you'll be like, okay, you know, one of us cooks, the other one does the dishes. That's a system that most people have. When I cook, I'm like cleaning up constantly. Yeah, and when it's time to do the dishes are the only thing left. I've put the dishes by the sink. Like it's all the food waste is in the garbage. When men, Josh doesn't do this, but you know, when other men cook, they just leave everything out. It's like pans with stuff in them and food, like packages that are open. Cleaning while you cook.
My partner has a very mask energy in the kitchen then because she is not getting cleaned up. And she has a bad habit of like keeping drawers open and cabinets open.
So just hitting your head left and right. Yeah.
So Dana, that's another thing too. Get ready for some things you learn about your person that you did not know that they were doing when they're alone in their home.
Great. Right. Looking forward to that. Yeah.
And you're going to learn about yourself, what your secret alone things are. Because when you live alone, so you're like, I don't know if I would do this in front of somebody or not. You're going to start to like feel shame about certain things. Yeah. Like I used to make myself solo cheese plates. Like I would...
You're ashamed of that? That sounds delightful.
That's awesome. It's not where I thought you were going.
It's a gross thing to do in front of somebody who is not also eating
cheese.
From the cheese.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, that's one of my alone things. It's like, if there's a night for whatever reason that Josh is like, Josh went to take a drive or Josh is out like on a run or something like that, I will be like, yeah, time to eat some cheese. It's going to be a journey, Dana. I can't wait to go on it with you.
I'll follow back. Yeah.
That's so exciting. I'm really excited for you guys. That's so great. Alyssa, I feel like you have goals for 2020.
No, I actually have none. I have none.
Really?
No.
Not a single goal.
No, because I feel like Naomi, like I've just really gotten through 2020 and I'm afraid that if my goals are too lofty for 2021 and things don't pick back up until like April or May, that's going to be like a long time that I sit here thinking I failed. So mostly I'm just going to try to stay healthy. I'm going to keep making jam. I'm going to segue into marmalades for January and February.
Okay. Wow, segue into course. Marmalades.
Of course. Mm-hmm. That's kind of it. You know, think about working again at some point, doing what I don't know. So we'll see. Mostly my plan is to try to stay upbeat.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I've tried to make, I got asked by an old coworker of mine the other day what my 2021 resolution was because she was writing something about it. And I think that my brain kind of got thinking along those lines. And so I've made some goals for myself that I think are like, attainable and don't depend on other people to happen. So like, I've really enjoyed being outside a lot this year, like going and enjoy, I mean, and I'm lucky to live in a place where I can drive to like a bunch of like state parks and national parks and stuff like that. And that's been the highlights of my year, have been spending time outdoors. So I think there's a couple like national parks in California that I've never visited before. Mm. And I think it'd be cool in 2021 to take a trip up, maybe like, you know, go to Mount Shasta or Mount Whitney or something like that. There's just like a lot of cool outside stuff. So that's something that the pandemic cannot can prevent me from doing. And that's like an attainable goal. I also want to get rid of like half of my clothes. Oh, I've realized during the pandemic that I have too much stuff in my house and I need to have less of it. Every time I've like spend so much time scrolling through Instagram, looking at these beautiful interiors and nobody ever has as much shit as I do. I just need to get rid of some of my shit.
Erin, they do. They just hide it before the Instagram picture.
Well, maybe I just need a big shit bin to throw my shit in.
Can I tell you the best part? We're having construction done at our house and they brought a dumpster.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I was really like, can I use this? They're like, you're paying for it. And I have made use of it. And you're right. It is, if I haven't used it in a year, there needs to be serious thought about why, and then it has to go.
Mm-hmm. I don't dumpster clothes though, because I
don't. No, not clothes, other
yeah,
shit.
I don't tend to wear clothes out, and I try to give them away if I can. In New York City, there's some really, in like a major city, there's like really good, like if you have nice clothes that you want to give away, there's like really good places to give it to that like help people dress up for job interviews and stuff like that, which is definitely something I would recommend. I'm probably going to try to do that in LA. It's just, it's a large task. I also am like super afraid of getting my blood drawn. Have been since I was 12. Just even the thought of it gives me the willies. And I think 2021 is the year that I like try to get over it. Huh. Like I will try hypnosis. I will try, you know, I will like do what I need to do to get over being afraid of getting my blood drawn.
Erin, there's an incredible company called Theranos. Just a dream of a woman.
A strong woman.
A girl boss, if you will. A black
turtleneck. Ladies are doing it for themselves.
They're doing it and they are getting just finger pricks. And you can find out everything.
And there's a 20% chance your blood comes back right.
Yeah. I'm willing to take that risk. I think it's great. Tian, do you have any 2021 goals?
I mean, I don't have any. I'm trying to stay away from like career goals because I feel like that feels really overwhelming. I have been saying recently that I want to flip something. So that could be like, or rehab something. I just want to like, I've been watching a lot of van life videos and like HGTV. And I just want to take something and make it nice and new. So like my in-laws have a cabin that is falling apart on their property. So I was like telling them that I want to flip it and like rehab it. And they're like, okay, Tian. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do this. I've never used a saw in my life, but I'm going to do this. And they were like, okay, just draw up a plan and do it. So that is kind of my goal. I did walk in there with my partner and took pictures, and I walked out and I was like, oh, I think I bit off a little bit more than I can chew because the floor is warped and the walls are kind of decaying, but I think I can do it. That is, I want to rehab something.
Oh, that's really
that's
cool.
That's a good one.
I just want to do stuff with my hands.
That's a good goal.
Yeah, so we'll that's definitely a good goal. Well, I think that congratulations to all of you for making it through 2020. And I'm really glad that you were all here for this episode, which is dropping on Christmas Eve. And so Merry Christmas to all of you. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we have to let Alyssa go off to something else, but we have a fight club to end all holiday fight clubs. So we'll be right back.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream. Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies, to make four decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
And welcome back. We are almost to the end of the show, but before we get to this edition of Fight Club, a little bit of housekeeping. It's the holiday season, and you don't want to be left with a bad taste of an unfulfilled wish on your wish list. So do yourself a favor, head over to crooked.com/store, and you can grab yourself some limited time holiday merch from your favorite podcast. Obviously, Hysteria. We have a Hysteria-themed desk calendar that has 12 amazing illustrations in it. It is a real treat to page through. We also have adorable Eleanor mugs and Midge Podcat mugs. Don't end the year in disappointment. Head to crooked.com/store now and treat yourself. And second announcement, but probably more important than the first announcement, we're just days away from the January 5th runoff in Georgia that will determine control of the Senate. If you're ready for a new year, a new Georgia, a new Senate majority leader. Hello, we need to get rid of Mitch McConnell. Head over to votesaveamerica.com/Georgia to find something you can do in the home stretch. No matter where you are, there are ways to support groups on the ground in Georgia doing the work. There'll be volunteer opportunities available right up until the polls close on January 5th. So sign up for a shift today at votesaveamerica.com/Georgia. Okay, the house has been kept. Now let's move on to Fight Club. Okay, every year at Christmas, there is the annual discourse about whether or not Christmas things are problematic. For years and years, when I was young, it was about baby, it's cold outside. Is baby, it's cold outside actually a terrible song about a predator? In recent years, we have moved past baby, it's cold outside and on to Love Actually. The movie Love Actually came out in, I believe, 2003. And it is a British rom-com about love and Christmas. I think everybody who's listening at this point has probably seen it. Otherwise, why are you listening to us talk about a movie you haven't seen? So in 2013, at the time, actually, she was my colleague, Lindy West, wrote a takedown piece of the movie Love Actually about how much she hates it and how bad of a movie it is. And it was like a mega viral piece. People shared it all over the place. And every year since then, there have been people trying to kind of replicate the virality of the piece by shitting on Love Actually. Now, enter Dana Schwartz, current American luminary and columnist and author. She wrote this at Bustle. No, Love Actually is not problematic. Dana, can you explain why you believe Love Actually is not problematic?
Okay. Well, I mean, problematic is just like a catch-all phrase. So mostly I was trying to explain that, like, in Lindy West's takedown piece is very funny. I think it's like sort of the canonical takedown of Love Actually. And I really enjoy it. I think it's really funny, but I also genuinely enjoy the movie Love Actually. And so I want to point out to people that sort of this internet cottage industry of pointing out, like, if you like zoom in on anything, you can find out the ways it's like funny in a wrong way or bad. But also if you zoom out, you can be like, no, okay, this is a nonsense movie about people who don't relate to actual human behavior in any meaningful way. This movie is cheesy as hell. It's not trying to like inform or educate. It's just meant to entertain. And on that level, if you enjoy it, that is okay. And you do not need to be shamed for it.
Okay. Let's see. Does any Tien, Naomi, do you have anything to say about Love Actually?
Well, it's a master manipulator, you know, a truly manipulative piece. I haven't seen it in years. I remember when I saw it when I was young, it's like, I used to be a romantic. Now my heart is crusted over. So now I have no interest in it, but I remember thinking it was cute as hell. But I also was like, you a messy bitch, Love Actually, because it opens by talking about 9/11.
Yeah, it does.
You don't need to do that. Like, it was just like from the beginning, they're literally just like, don't you miss humanity and connections? And it's like, oh, okay, Love Actually, I get it. So I think it's a very manipulative motion picture, but it's a cavalcade of stars. And it is cheesy as hell. It is like cute as hell. To me, it's like the only Hallmark movie to go blockbuster. Like, it's a blockbuster mm-hmm. Hallmark movie.
And I will mm-hmm. also posit, is there like a Christmas movie that is not manipulative to some level? Like, that yeah. is exactly what it's trying to do. And I'm going to say it succeeds.
You did not mm-hmm. need 9/11 in a Christmas movie.
I feel like I've gone in a wave of my Love Actually experience. When I first saw it, when it came out, I was like, this is beautiful and fun and funny. This is what romance should be like on multiple levels with different people. And then I came out and I was like, this is straight propaganda. I can't watch this anymore. And then Happiest Season came out, which I have very strong feelings about. And I was like, okay, great. A gay movie, like a gay Christmas movie. This is for us. I watched it. It is not for us. So
it is straight propaganda.
It is straight propaganda as well. And so I bet if I rewatched Love Actually that I would fully enjoy it, because it was, when I remember watching it, I was like, oh, this has a lot of rom and it has a lot of calm and I'm into that. Whereas other holiday movies are like real bad. Like Happy, I'm sorry, but I did not enjoy Happiest Season. Other holiday movies that I've seen do not have as much rom and as much calm as Love Actually. So I'm on the Love Actually train. I might rewatch it.
And you have to rewatch it having no expectations beyond like, this is going to be a fun Christmassy movie. And you get like seven of Britain's most charismatic stars doing like little vignettes like that. What other movie gives you that much bang for your buck? You get so much British bang for your buck.
You know, I think that there is something that feels a little bit like, okay, who likes Love Actually? Mostly women, the rom-com audience, mostly women. There are a lot of equally stupid movies that men love in large numbers that don't, that aren't in the like his, like the cultural crosshairs as much. Mm-hmm. Like they're like, I tried to watch Big Trouble in Little China one time. It is unwatchable, unwatchable. And the straight man that I tried to watch it with was like, this movie is so fun. It's great. I was like, no, it is unwatchable. I feel like Love Actually is straight women's Big Trouble in Little China. Also, to piggyback on something that Dana was saying. I think that the thing about Christmas movies is like, it's a tradition holiday where we do the same things every year over and over again. And because we're doing these things over and over again, we're paying a lot more attention to them than we would if they just passed us by the one time. Mm-hmm. And if you pay close attention to almost any movie, you're going to find that it's bad. And almost every holiday movie is particularly bad. Home Alone, a movie about a terrible mom and a sadistic little boy.
Child.
He is horrible. I mean, my theory is that Kevin is dead in Home Alone, which I wrote a whole piece about. He's a evil spirit and the wet bandits are trying to drag him to hell. Anyway, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, also very deeply weird. Frosty the Snowman, super weird, like an anthropomorphic pile of snow comes alive.
The main part about Rudolph, and again, maybe this is like a Jew, like hearing these traditions from the outside. The thing that really bugged me about Rudolph was all the reindeer loved him. Like they only like him because he's useful. Like once his nose serves a purpose and Santa's like, no, this will be helpful. Then all the reindeer loved him.
That's why I like most people.
I know they have to be useful. Like, I was like, I get that.
I mean, I think it's an allegory for growing breasts, you know, like when you don't, when you're a little girl and you don't have breasts, none of the boys pay attention to you and then you grow them and then all the reindeer love you.
When I had boobs, I also was able to get through the snow better too.
They block the snow.
You're going to lead Santa's sleigh with your boobs. Also, you know, the Nutcracker. I have railed against the Nutcracker. The Nutcracker is the weirdest thing ever. And it is so weird that we're like, let's take our kids to see the Nutcracker. It's such a weird story about a creepy old man who gives a girl a haunted doll that comes alive and she fights some rats, trips balls, and at the end of it flies away on her bed.
That's what it's about?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I've only maybe seen like parts of it.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I just know the ballerina's dance.
The Christmas story is also upsetting.
Christmas story, though, is my favorite. To me, I love it, but the truth and the light, because it exposes the darkness.
It is
of
dark.
The holiday. Yeah. It is so fucking dark. And it's like, yes, all of this is grotesque and nonsense. And it calls it out. That's the only Christmas movie.
Okay, I disagree. I think Carol is the only other Christmas movie. I'm sorry. I don't get a platform like this all the time. And I just want to say that Carol is an incredible Christmas movie. I know I'm being a stereotype right now, but it has everything. It has holiday season. It has a road trip. It has a gun from out of nowhere. It has
It has really good coats.
It has high-waisted pants. It has incredible. It has Cate Blanchett being a straight-up daddy. It is incredible.
I think Elf is a good holiday movie.
I love Elf. Love Elf.
It's because it like acknowledges its cartoonishness. It doesn't try to be a silly movie. Also, I recently rewatched Christmas Vacation, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and I was like, I think that Josh and I are the Todd and the Margot of our block. You know?
Yeah. I've never seen it. Who are Todd and Margot?
They're Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah, are their yuppie neighbors and who are annoyed by Clark Griswold, who is trying to have a great holiday by being a total fucking dick to everyone around him. And the neighbors are just sort of like snobby yuppies. And like, there's one scene where they come home from working out and they're drinking water. And we're supposed to hate them because they're like, healthy and doing activities. And I was like, God, I'm fucking Margo now. I'm Margo.
70 books, sucks. Baby.
70 books. I think part of the Love Actually hate, like you were saying, Erin, it's like a holiday of repetition so that there's something so like, not clickbaity, but yeah, like people want to read like, oh, this thing you've been doing is secretly, you didn't notice, blah, blah, blah. And it's also like so embarrassingly earnest. Like there's no snark to liking Love Actually. Like Love Actually literally opens with a thing about 9/11. Like it is the opposite
of sincere.
Yeah, it's so embarrassingly sincere. It's like the polar opposite of people who say that their favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard, who are trying to be like kind of cool. Right. But yeah. Now I'm saying it's come around the other way, where if you say Die Hard is your favorite Christmas movie, I'm like, all right, you're like, get off Bumble. That's like a little embarrassing.
Yeah. It's like you own Infinite Jest and only read the first 5 pages.
Yeah.
That kind of personality.
Because you
to
were
me.
Like, I don't want to read.
Like, I'll say I love The Holiday by Nancy Myers. If it's on TV, I will watch the entire thing.
I do like The Holiday.
Is that, is that Kate Blanchett?
Kate Winslet.
It's always
Kate Blanchett this and Kate Blanchett that.
Sorry.
And look at her wearing those pants.
She's obsessed with Ocean's 8 because Kate Blanchett is giving us like rocker vibe, daddy.
She is. Yeah. She is. She's bossing people around.
Okay, we have to wrap up this fight club. It wasn't really a fight. I think it's kind of fun to spar over holiday stuff. I want to say the best Christmas movie, though, is... Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, yes.
Sorry.
Erin.
Muppet Christmas
Carol. Yeah. Fully on board.
It's so Erin. Good. A Christmas Carol itself is weird and kind of too, it's hokey. But when you put Muppets in those roles, it suddenly makes sense and it's a very touching holiday.
I gotta say, I can't see Muppets for more than a half hour. When it gets to, if it's getting to be like longer than that, I'm like, there's too much flopping around. I can't. Yeah. I just don't like it. I'm sorry.
I'm not into Muppets as well.
Yeah.
It's like really uncomfortable. I don't know. I detest when Muppets interact with people and people like treat them like they're real. Like, I'm like, this is literally a puppet and I don't like that we have to engage in this nonsense.
That's what makes it like, so
why
good.
Why do we have to ignore that there's like an adult human just like at knee level trying to be.
That's the best part, is that in Muppet Christmas Carol, Michael Caine plays it so serious. He never tips his hat. He acts like he's
I know, and we should not require that of Michael Caine, okay? He is a treasure, and there is no reason why he should be bringing that royal Shakespeare realness to a goddamn puppet.
But he does, and we should be grateful.
He does.
Wow.
We don't deserve him.
No.
He is a true treasure. We must protect Michael Caine at all costs.
No.
I think we went to some interesting places in this conversation. I really want to revisit this Muppets thing because I love the Muppets, and I have like a lot of theories about like Muppet preference and how it like it will predict your adult problems, like whatever your favorite Muppet was when you were a kid, like can predict your adult problems. Well, because all the Muppets are just like these extreme emotional, like these extreme representations of like emotions to like help familiarize kids with like navigating the world. And I think that whichever one you were drawn to is like something.
Who is your favorite Muppet?
Does that include the Sesame Street people too?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I liked Oscar the Grouch and Cookie Monster, and my adult problems are being misanthropic and messy and being hedonistic. So those are my problems. But that's another conversation for another day. And that's the show for this week. And that's the last episode of the year. Thank you to Naomi Ekperigin for joining. Thank you to Tien Tran. Thank you to Dana Schwartz. Thank you to my ride or die, Alyssa Mastromonaco. Thank you to Ensei Ufot for all the work that she's done for Georgia. And thanks to you, the listeners. It has been a hell of a year. And I feel honored that you've been with us through it. Here's to hoping that 2021 has some better stuff in store. There will be more hysteria for you next year. Planet, this nation, South Janet. With these girls,
I fan it. Y2K email. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Our digital team is Narmal Konian and Matt DeGroot. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.